Now, our church, for the past 2 years, has been going verse by verse every Sunday through the Gospel of Matthew, which means that we have experienced the entire story of Jesus' birth, his life, his ministry, his miracles, his teachings, and then his death. That's the story so far. And over the course of the last week, which we in the church call Holy Week, through our special services, have journeyed with Jesus in the last few days of his life as he enters the city of Jerusalem. And there he spends those final moments teaching his people, confronting corrupt leadership and the religious order that had gone astray so badly, and also preparing his disciples for the death that was coming that he was about to suffer. Then on Good Friday, Jesus actually finished the work that he came to do. He did what he was sent for. He accomplished what he was supposed to. And after a long, bitter, and torturous night of accusations and beatings and trials, he is finally nailed to a cross. And once he is up there, he is left to die a painful, shameful, and humiliating death that is public and for everyone to see outside the city gates. Then after a few hours, he finally bowed his head and he gave up his spirit. And after he died, one of his followers went to the governor, requested his body to be taken down from the cross, and he buried him in his own tomb and rolled a stone in the entrance of that tomb, a very heavy stone, to seal the entrance. And that's where we're left. The one who was supposed to bring life now just laid there completely lifeless. The one who thought, or we thought, was going to save, seemingly couldn't even save himself from the fate that he suffered. So Jesus is dead. And these women that are going in our story today to the tomb, they are going a little late. He died right before the Sabbath. That's God's commanded day of rest to his people. And because there wasn't enough time to prepare his body properly before that Sabbath began, they had to just put him in the tomb. And now that that day is over, these women can finally go with perfumes and oils and spices to prepare his body in a way that we usually would through an embalming these days. And so these same women that are going to the tomb are the same women that saw Jesus when he was dying. They were there at the crucifixion. They spoke to him. They even tried to help him and encourage him and minister to him. But at the end of the day, no matter what they said, no matter what they wanted, at the end, all they were left with was a dead leader. And after years, I mean, think about where they must be emotionally right now. After years of having left their lives behind to follow Jesus, he's just dead. That's the end of the road. What's going on here? And along with Jesus, their hopes had also died. Their dreams had died. The future that they had been envisioning all this time following him, of what life was going to be like with him and what he would do and all of this, it was gone. It was dead in the matter of just a few hours. And this must have been an extremely confusing time for these women and for all of the disciples. They barely had any time to process. He had just died a few days ago. You know, when someone dies, you just don't really have the time to process the finality of the death. Everything is, you just kind of go along until it hits you a little later down the road. They couldn't even process that, let alone the uncertainties that came with it, the implications of the death of Jesus. That even once it was settled that he was dead, they would start to think, well, okay, I guess he is dead, but what does that mean now? And what does that mean for us? Where are we supposed to go from here? Was any of it actually real? When we followed him, when we saw, when we witnessed, when he did all of these things, was he really the Son of God? Or was it all a sham? Was it a trick? Were we fooled? Because based on how dead he is, I don't know. So their whole world, through the death of Jesus, has been turned completely upside down. The only thing that was certain, because they saw it with their own eyes, is that he was dead, and that he was laid and buried in that tomb. That much they know, that much they saw. And now while so many questions linger, the only thing there is to do, just for now, is to prepare his body now that the Sabbath is over. And so when they arrive at the tomb, nothing goes as they expect. Something absolutely incredible happens. God shakes the earth as he sends one of his messengers, an angel, to these women. And as he comes, he rolls the stone away that had covered the entrance of the tomb. And the guards, they pass out for fear because they can't handle what's happening. They are just besides themselves. And as he does that, he sits on the stone and he starts speaking to the women. And as he speaks, their world is turned upside down again, which, if you have been keeping track, now makes it right side up. Everything's about to be okay because of what this angel has to say. And the angel tells them that this Jesus that they saw die is not in the tomb anymore. The Jesus who has been put to death and the Jesus who has been buried is now neither dead nor buried. In fact, he has risen from the dead. And the angel says, don't just take my word for it. Look yourself. See the place where he was laid. And as surely as you saw him die and you saw him buried, you will also see him not in this tomb. He's no longer dead. And once they go and they see for themselves inside the tomb, the angel sends them back to tell the disciples everything that they have seen. But all they have seen so far is, well, not Jesus, right? But anyway, they are fearful and joyful enough to go back to tell them. But as they make their way over to the disciples, they see the opposite of what they've seen so far. Instead of not Jesus, they actually get to see Jesus. And this is quite a reunion. And we have to say that this is not only seeing an old friend that they had lost. This is not just your regular, I am seeing someone I never thought I would see again. This is different. As these women encounter Jesus, what they see is their one true hope alive and well. What they see is their future secured. They see their lives saved. And they see the promises of God, which he has made to his people from the very beginning, over and over and over again, are finally fulfilled because of what Jesus has done and because of the reality of the risen Jesus. But what they really see above anything else is the impossible. We take it for granted because so many of us are Christians, because so many of us know the story of Jesus and the story of Easter, but we want to appreciate that it is impossible for the dead to come back to life. It cannot be done. Nobody has figured it out. It is impossible that the man who had nails driven through his feet should walk to meet them again. It is impossible that a heart that was pierced with a spear should now be beating again as they encounter him. And so very plainly, what has happened shouldn't have happened. And if anyone were to tell you, think about this, be honest, somebody that you know, that they said, hey, a guy I know, a friend of mine, a family member, they died. And 3 days later, they came back to life. Hey, what do you think about that? Oh, wow, right? You wouldn't believe them. I wouldn't believe them. How do you say you don't believe them in a nice way? Hopefully nobody ever says this to you, right? Don't worry about it. But the point is, I wouldn't believe it, to be very honest. The resurrection of Jesus can be very hard to believe. And there are many people in this world who look at it and say, I don't believe this. This is impossible. But I would argue, and for myself, the impossibility of the resurrection is what makes it worth believing in. Think about this. The life that we live and the world that we live in are filled to the brim with pain and with brokenness and hardship. It is filled with people who are suffering and hurting themselves and each other. And when we look around and what the world is, it barely resembles the beauty and the order and the glory in which God has created everything. That's the harsh truth. And the reason for all of this is because of sin. It is. Not just the things that we do or don't do, not just the ways in which we miss the mark or make mistakes. It is that, but it's bigger than that. It's greater than that. Sin is a condition. It is a curse that has corrupted the whole creation driven it askew, made it something it wasn't supposed to be, and perverted life. And this sin, all it brings at the end is death. Physical death, spiritual death, emotional death, relational death. Every kind of death and decay and brokenness is because of this sin. It is a direct result. And so that means that this world and everyone in it is as good as dead by default, born into the sin. Can't shake the sin. We are dead men and dead women walking. And God knows that. He knows that ever since we brought this sin into the world, that was it. That was our fate. That's what we were destined for. That's what we deserve as we joyfully live in this sin. We even embrace it in our lives. But even though this was our problem that we brought in and our problem to fix, God promised ever since the sin came into the world, you can't do this. You will never be able to fix this. You can't make it up. And I love you so much that even though I have no obligation, I will make this right for you. I am going to send someone, a savior, a deliverer, someone who can take this burden of sin and free you from it, the stain which is on you and your soul, and cleanse you. Someone who will take this death that you are steeped in and trade it for life and give it to you freely. But this is an impossible task. How could God promise this? Who could he send that could be able to do something like this? The truth is, nobody can. If somebody could overcome sin and eliminate death and restore, why haven't you done it yet? Why haven't they done it yet? It can't be done. And so in order to be free from this impossible problem, we need a Savior who can do the impossible. We just don't just need a man who would be sent. We don't need some sort of a prophet, some sort of a wise person. We need someone to be a Savior who is man and God at the same time. We need a Savior who will do the impossible for us. Not just the pretty hard, not just the very, very unlikely, not the thing that we didn't expect. We need him to do the impossible. Because when I sin and I turn to God, I know that I am forgiven because my Savior died to pay the price for that sin. When I die, I know that I will be raised again because my Savior is risen from the dead. And when I see the corruption of the world, I remember that the one who could not be corrupted will bring his perfection to the creation and restore everything on that great day. What we need, again, is nothing short of impossible. That's why we rejoice on Easter, because that's exactly what Jesus has done for us. But this Jesus, he's not just someone who has done the impossible for us when we die, right? He's not just a card that we punch or a ticket that we have that at the end of our lives we present it, we're in, that's it. That's all Jesus does and can do for us. Right here and right now, in your life, in your situation, in your circumstance, you need to know that this Jesus who does the impossible is able and willing to do the impossible for you and in your life as well. Because let alone, you know, death and resurrection, there are so many smaller things in this world that seem still impossible to us. And so it seems impossible that your marriage is going to bounce back after all of the hurt and the pain, after the things that were done and that were said, after all of it, that seems impossible. And it seems impossible that people who have relapsed and relapsed and relapsed could actually recover from their addiction. It seems impossible that you will ever be made whole again after the way in which people have hurt you and caused you pain and trauma and bitterness, and that you will ever be the same as from before that. It seems impossible that those who are so desperately lonely and orphaned and widowed would be in joyful community and family again. There's so much that seems impossible. But everything that has been lost, everything that has been taken, Everything that has been broken and everything that is missing will be restored by Jesus. And these are not just cliches. This is not just a stock list of bad things. These are things that have actually happened and are happening in this congregation and in the church on earth among God's people. As Jesus in the here and now continues to work and deliver and provide and heal in a way that only He can. And the best part of all of this is that Jesus does the impossible all while we do nothing. Jesus doesn't ask us to do anything. Jesus doesn't need us to do anything. We don't have to save ourselves. We do not have the burden of doing the impossible. All that there is left for us to do is not work hard or try hard or be, you know, think hard enough and solve everything ourselves. All there is left to do for us is to have faith. That's it. Faith in the one who did it all for us, who has accomplished. And as we follow him, as he teaches us, leads us, guides us, refreshes us in this life, we start to get our lives back. We start to become more whole. We start to become who God has made us to be as we forgive and are forgiven, as we are reconciled to God and to one another, as we are encouraged and given hope, as we start to lean on Him instead of ourselves for what He has done, is doing, and will do. And so by faith alone, we now receive freedom, restoration, and life to the fullest now and forever. And this is the God that we want. This is the God that we need, and this is the God of Easter, Jesus Christ, the risen one. And so all praise to the risen Jesus, the one who does the impossible for us, the one who is our living hope. And as we praise, I invite you to stand with me as we sing.